say ah. It's time for Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. And now, Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Haven't seen you two in a while. You know, we're pre-recording. And what was the last time we saw each other? It was about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
about,
I think so.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
I always look forward to seeing you two.
Likewise. Well,
we missed you.
Look forward to, well, you're going to see me in about a week in your office.
Yeah.
So we're going to check and see if I'm ready for my implant.
Yes.
So, and I will say that the tooth that was removed, and I told you, when Greg showed me the tooth, I said goodbye, my friend, my old friend. Yeah. We were together for a long time.
Did you keep it?
No, he. I think he disposed
okay,
of it somewhere.
Disposed of it.
But you know, it healed like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was without any, you know, one of you called me that night.
Mm-hmm. I think it was me.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, it healed. It was, you know, unremarkable.
We planned it that
Good.
Way.
Completely unremarkable.
We planned it that way.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
I appreciate it. I'm surprised you didn't take it home to put it under your pillow.
I'll do anything to try to, you know, for a buck, you know. Which, by the way, that's actually, you know, I'm joking, but the subject of today's show,
yes.
You know, we're talking about managed care, and we have at least three very sad examples of a system gone very wrong.
That's a good way to put it.
And, you know, you and I were talking, Dr. Edelstein, mm-hmm. before we went on the air. And you're actually rather sympathetic, in a sense, to what the dental profession goes through today. You know, it starts with the loans that are owed, and then the insurance companies, and mm-hmm. the very meager reimbursements that people receive, people on Medicare, pro bono work that you find yourself doing for one reason or another. You know, it all kind of comes together like a perfect storm. And then this case of one Dr. Patel.
Yes.
Children's Dentistry of Rome, I believe it was called.
Yes.
It's a perfect storm.
I believe so. You know, at first glance, when I first came across this incident, I was appalled, as anyone would be, either after reading the news article, and this appeared where? In the Rome...
Rome Magazine.
Rome News Tribune.
Rome Life Magazine.
It was all over the local.
It was
news.
In the AJC. Here's a copy of the article.
It was in the AJC, and there was also a WSB special report.
Yes.
About this incident. And at first glance, it sounds like there's one bad apple, and this is terrible, a terrible dentist. And before we started airing, we talked about it, and I have to say, I can give people like this the benefit of the doubt. I think a lot of times, many of these people in these situations are not necessarily bad dentists. They're just placed in situations where they can't do good dentistry. And there's a possibility that this could be one of those examples.
Why are they, maybe we take a step back, why are they put in that position?
Well, they're put into that position because of low reimbursement levels by put upon them by governmental programs like Medicaid has low reimbursement levels, 40-50% of private practice levels, or managed care from private insurance companies with low reimbursement levels. And a lot of these folks are working in corporate offices, and things are dictated to them, certain treatment parameters may be dictated to them as far as what staff members they work with, as far as how much time, how fast they have to produce, what labs they have to work with. So there are a lot of things that are placed upon them, a lot of constraints that may place them in a position to not be able to do good dentistry. I know I would not be able to do good dentistry if I was in the same situation. So why would they be different, Jeff?
How much do they generally owe when they come out of school today? Do you know?
Someone out of school can owe anywhere from $200,000 to $400,000.
That's staggering.
It's staggering. When I finished, I had a I was a step ahead because my father, I've passed away when I was younger, and he left enough money at least to help me get through undergrad and graduate school. And I spent all of it, believe me. I spent every penny on my education in those two schools. So when I finished my postgraduate program, I had about $30,000 in debt, which I paid off in the next 5 or 8 years.
But that's not $200,000 either.
It's completely different. I mean, I think my payment was $250 a month or $300 a month or something very reasonable.
All right, so let me ask you this, and either one of you can comment on this. So I've told you in the past about, well, my general practitioner, medical doctor, owned his own practice. And then for one reason or another, he ended up working for a big conglomerate whose name we all know, but I'm not going to say the name. Okay. A medical, you know. It just seems like it's getting more and more that way today, whether it's medicine or maybe dentistry as well, or even in other areas. You know, the people who have a store on the town square say they can't compete with Walmart anymore.
Right. The local bookstore owner can't compete with the big. Veterinarians are going the route, too. They're corporate-owned veterinarian offices.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that folks really need to keep in mind, that if there's a corporate entity, whether it's a hedge fund or an investor or a private person that owns a half a dozen offices, for that investment and that liability, they have to get a profit. So if they don't get 15 or 20% off the top or more, then they've made a terrible investment.
So what percentage of dentists today would you say are working under what we call managed care conditions?
Half?
I don't know.
Would you say half? 60%?
Maybe.
Not a small percentage.
This, mind you, is perhaps an educated guess, but by no means meant to be an accurate assessment. But I think Sue's right, probably 50 or 60%.
All right, so let's go back 30 years, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage 30 years ago were in this situation?
5%, 10%.
Right. Yeah.
So
most of that was governmental programs like Medicaid.
So what's your prediction for the future? Would you say it's going to become more and more? Instead of 50%, will it be 75 or 80%?
Obviously, you're right. That's the direction it's heading. But the problem is, and we made this analogy before, if someone wants to fine dining, they'll go to a fine dining restaurant. And if they want a Crystal or McDonald's or fast food restaurant, they'll go there, but they know what they're getting. In this business, the business of dentistry, the one I know the best, people want and expect top quality care, but then they go to places where they're not getting paid to do top quality care. So
do they understand that?
No.
The consumer does not understand.
The consumer does not understand.
Correct.
It. The consumer thinks that it's the same.
It's the same.
Sue, can you make the analogy that you came across was with Publix, with a carton of milk?
Yeah.
Can get that, which is interesting.
We were talking to a physician, a medical colleague, about managed care and the pitfalls and what does he see, blah, blah, blah. And he made the analogy, people that have, they're not called food stamps anymore. There's another name for it.
EBT or something?
There's another name for it. It's got a funny, cute little name. But when they go to Publix, he brought it to our attention that it's not just the insurance companies and managed care, that our government is at fault with Medicaid as well when it comes to dentistry and or food stamps. When they go to Publix and they buy a carton of milk on food stamps, Publix does not say to them, oh, you're making that purchase with your food stamps. Well, then for you, the carton of milk is only $1. But for all the other consumers, it's $3. You see, in medicine and dentistry, when a Medicaid patient shows up to have their care given, the fees are lowered tremendously. And then they get passed off to us or the government to pay it off. Someone's going to make up for the lack of them getting paid dollar for dollar for that service.
But Publix gets that same amount of money,
whether it's food stamps or whether it's the person is charged the same fee. Now, they're charged the same fee for the gallon of milk. Their fee is not reduced because they're making that purchase on food stamps. But that's the problem with Medicaid.
For some reason, the government and managed care and the private sector sees fit to reduce the fee. And sometimes those fees could be below the cost that it takes to deliver that service. So I think we're looking at a symptom here. We're not looking at the cause, talking about this dentist in Rome. More times than not.
There are MDs who won't take Medicare patients.
Yes.
Because, well, they say we can't make any money.
For that reason.
They have to make money.
Not only can you not make money, but you lose money. You can't deliver the care for the fee that you're reimbursed.
My physician, well, we want to do a whole separate show on managed care in medicine, but let me conclude this segment or this topic by saying I still have a great relationship with my own physician. And she said that when she sees a Medicare patient, the fee is mostly paid by the government, and she gets reimbursed under a dollar for each B12 shot that she gives these elderly patients. She gets reimbursed less than a dollar. It costs her for the syringe, the solution, let alone for her time or the nurse's time to administer the injection, it costs them a little under $10 to administer it, but they get paid under a dollar.
Why does she take Medicare patients then?
Because she has felt obligated to do that for our elderly population.
Mm.
And she also was trained to do it, and she enjoys elderly. I asked her the same question. Then why do you do it? And that was her answer, that she feels obligated to do it.
All right, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, can we talk a little bit more about this case in Rome and as well as a case in Syracuse, New York, and a case in Indiana? And this is just, I think, it's probably the tip of the iceberg, actually.
Yes.
I think it should be the tip of the iceberg.
Mm. All right. You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. I'd like you to visit mygumdoc.com. Well, you happen to be my gum doc. I'm so happy to say I have a gum doc. But that's the way it works. Mygumdoc.com. Dr. Edelstein's office located at 2045 Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital. And Sue, I'll get this out of the way now. It's right next door to the Darlington Apartments.
Yes.
But you've been here longer than any of us, I think, in this town.
Yeah.
You remember the Darlington back in those swings?
Well, no, I didn't live in Atlanta back then. I was a mere child back then anyways, for the record, y'all.
Okay. All right, we'll be back with more of Open Wide with Sue and Dr. Edelstein in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. And we're talking about managed care and also this case in Rome, Georgia, that has received a lot of publicity. Not sure that's the right word to use. Publicity sounds like something positive, but
it's received a lot of attention. It's been in the media.
There are also cases that we're going to look at in Indiana and in New York as well. I wonder, Dr. Edelstein, you know, considering what dentists go through today,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if some of them say to themselves, "Gee, if I knew then what I know now, I would have not done this. I'd have gone another avenue."
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question, because I had a conversation last week with a very good friend of mine, a good dentist, and with his heart in the right place. And his name was Dr. X, mm-hmm. because I'd rather not say his name.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a patient, this particular patient wanted to go to a new dentist, had a falling out with the old dentist for whatever the reason. And the case was maybe a little bit above average as far as complexity and laboratory fees involved. But in order to make it fly, you needed to work with a decent lab. And I sent the x-rays, photographs, and I started talking to Dr. X that I wanted to refer this patient to you. And he said that he didn't want to take the case. It's in the patient's best interest to go somewhere else. It turns out that Dr. X is in a managed care environment, working for a corporate entity. And Dr. X then proceeded to tell me that if he knew now what he was getting into 2 years ago when he signed his contract, he never would have done it. For a number of reasons. Number one, he has a non-compete clause, so he can't just leave. He's stuck there if he wants to stay in the greater Atlanta area. And he has a family. He has a family, mm-hmm. a home. The kids go to school here.
How long is the wife, non-compete, you know?
I'm not sure. They're different. They vary anywhere from a year to 2 years and anywhere from 5 miles to, I've heard 13 miles. But if an entity has multiple offices, 13 miles will put them out of town.
Yeah.
So
Two years is long enough to go broke.
I know, actually, this isn't sure. Dr. X in particular, but I do know this is Dr. S, another person that I know, and I know as a matter of fact that he ended up signing a contract that was 2 years and 13 miles, and the entity has 10 offices around town. So there's no place.
There's one every 2 miles.
Well, there's no place. There's an office in Conyers, there's an office in Roswell, there's an office in Dunwoody, there's an office two or three in the south side of town.
Near Atlanta.
You can't be anywhere. You'll always be within 13 miles anywhere in the Atlanta and greater Atlanta area.
Yeah.
That was Dr. S. So Dr. X then went on to tell me that not only did he not realize what he was getting into, and he was stuck for 2 years after he quits with the non-compete agreement, otherwise he would get sued. He went on to tell me that the main reason that he couldn't take this case is because the patient deserved to have someone work with at least an average lab. And he was just informed a week or two earlier that he had to use this inexpensive lab that this corporation had a relationship with. However, if he wanted to use a better lab, there would be a greater fee, and he would have to pay the difference out of his own pocket.
That's amazing.
The difference between the inexpensive lab and the greater lab, and the fees could be ridiculously exorbitant to the point to where Dr. X would actually lose money by taking this case, and he didn't think it would be fair to this patient to use the inexpensive lab because Dr. X had no choice. So he asked me to please send the patient somewhere else. Now, Dr. X has very high morals and values.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the next dentist would have values that high. I think someone might have been tempted to take a case like this on and
use the cheap lab.
Use the inexpensive
just
lab.
Figure out a way to make it work.
Figure out a way to make it work.
Which means it's not going to work.
We actually talked about another dentist in one of our early shows about a Dr. B who did use an inexpensive lab for a case, and I told you that he struggled with it, and he made it work, and you know, not always is it going to work out, and this is the constraint that was put upon Dr. X. I don't think it was fair to him. I don't think it's fair to the patients. What if the next patient comes along and they're not quite as difficult, and Dr. X thinks, you know, maybe this inexpensive lab will pull it off and do a decent job, and maybe they won't. Because it is, after all, an expensive lab. These patients that are going to him don't know that their laboratory work is done at a Crystal or McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that. They don't even ask the question. We had we did a show on implants a few weeks ago. And what you learned, Jeff, and we brought out, is that there are generic implants. That there are implants made in China with no warranty, and much lower quality control than dental implants made stateside.
Hmm.
And there's a huge difference between the tolerances, the quality control, and the tolerances that the companies that put these out, there are huge differences.
Aren't there standards that say, laws, or I don't know how you explain it, but that require that they have to comply with a certain level of competence?
That certain level of competence might be not great. I mean, maybe it's a minimal level. These are all FDA approved.
You know, one of the things you've told me, though, is that, let's say, one of the differences between medicine and dentistry is that in medicine, they have review boards.
Yes.
So if you do something that's outside the pale, they're going to pick up on it and you're going to be disciplined.
Yes, especially if there's a procedure that's done in the hospital. Because if there's a medical board complaint or if there's a lawsuit, then that hospital will review the case. And that physician will be in trouble with the hospital and may end up losing their hospital privileges. So that doctor may actually lose money on a given case, but that doctor has complete disincentive to do anything less than a great job.
But we don't have that kind of oversight in dentistry.
In dentistry, the operating room is in each little office.
Right.
So there is no hospital board oversight. that level of oversight is not there in dentistry. So every dentist operates in their own little island. So you being the listener, it's up to you to choose a dentist that has high standards, high morals, and maybe isn't involved in managed care or corporate dentistry where there are constraints put on them to do dentistry that isn't the best.
Now, how do you know? All right, let's assume you're considering a dentist who's not part of managed care, because that's pretty easy to find out. You said something about high standards and high morals, you know, and using a lab, let's say, that has a high level of competence.
Mm-hmm.
So you should ask your dentist these questions?
I would ask the dentist. I would ask the specialist. What dentist do you like? I need a new physician. My physician is having to retire. So the first thing I did is I had a patient who's a cardiologist at Piedmont Hospital. And I said, who would you go to as a physician? And he gave me a few choices. And I'm going to go to one of those that he has worked with, and he thinks that they're very capable. Who better to give a referral? So I think patients that ask me what dentist they should work with, I think, is a great resource. If anyone knows an endodontist, an orthodontist, an oral surgeon, I mean, these are good resources. A hygienist, wouldn't they be good resources?
Resource. Yep, same thing with an operating room nurse. Ask her.
Yeah, they would know.
Ask her or him what doctors are good.
Yeah. I've even had a situation where I asked a doctor friend of mine about a particular doctor that I was considering using, and he said to me, no.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated that he told me that.
I've had the same thing happen, too.
He said, no, just for what you're talking about having done now, I wouldn't go there.
Right.
I'll tell you who you should use.
Right.
In fact, he even said, anybody in this particular practice I feel good about.
But, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and we would do the same thing if someone asked us that question.
So isn't it frustrating to you, though, that the public doesn't really understand anything that we're talking about?
It is frustrating.
They really
because if they walk into a Macy's, they know that they're getting a standard of retail. They know that if they walk into a Family Dollar store, that's different. They know that, and they make that choice in advance. In dentistry, there's no concept of a difference, and there is a difference. And these cases bear that out.
Mm. All right, we've got to take another break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about these particular cases, this Children's Dentistry of Rome, also the case in Indiana and the case in New York, where all three had one thing in common. They were all involved in managed care.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Go to mygumdoc.com. They're located 2045 Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital. Happens to be the practice that I use. Plenty of parking available. That's one thing I was concerned about, because you're right there in the heart of Buckhead across the street from Piedmont Hospital. Where the heck do you park? Well, there was plenty of parking available.
And it's easy.
And we pay for it. We pay for it.
Yeah, we pay for it.
You'd be surprised.
It doesn't get easier than that.
Sometimes how good it feels, just that.
It is a nice feeling.
$2, $5, whatever it is.
Yeah.
To be validated.
It's a beautiful gesture.
All right. And we'll be back with more of Open Wide with Sue and Dr. Edelstein when we return.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. The show is Open Wide. I want to remind our listeners about our new patient special. I happen to have taken advantage of it myself. It's $129. It's worth $650. And I remember all the things that you did, Dr. Edelstein and Sue. You know, I really felt like I got my money's worth. Could you want to feel that way as a consumer? I got my money's worth and more. I learned things that I never knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you something. You know, it's kind of interesting. And I don't know if you can understand this because you've been in the business so long, both of you. But, you know, the first time you open your mouth with a new dentist or a new hygienist, it's almost like you feel like you're naked. You know, here they're going to see what the inside of my mouth looks like.
It tells a lot.
It tells a lot.
It does.
I understand that, and I am very.
It's So I'm a little embarrassed in front of you two now.
I'm very.
Well, you've seen me, you know.
I'm very cognizant of that feeling. So I try to be extremely kind and extremely understanding and extremely gentle.
And you were. In fact, you even said that I was actually in pretty good shape, which yes. I didn't think I was. So that, but that was very disarming. It made me feel good. Instead of saying, "Oh, Jeff, I got to tell you, you know."
I would have said you had a friend who
that's an inside joke.
Wasn't in such good shape.
You know, we say sometimes, you know, like at your seminars, somebody mm-hmm. will say, "I have a friend who," because yeah. they're embarrassed to say it's them.
Yes.
But it is a little bit like, you know, it is a little unnerving when you open that mouth for the first time and they're going to see it and you're wondering, you know, I'm looking in your eyes, okay, to see what you're thinking of, you know, this guy now that you seem to have liked before that... You know what I'm saying? You know?
I know exactly.
By the way, do you see extremes on both ends? Somebody comes in looking like $1 million. They open their mouth and you're
yes.
like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And the other extreme, where they walk yeah. in bib overalls and you figure this is going to be.
And they're well cared for and well maintained. For. Yeah, absolutely. You see it yes. all.
You know, you've told me, too, and this is a little bit off subject, but sometimes people who live in the more rural areas... often have more dental problems, let's say, than people who live maybe in the affluent suburbs. And maybe it's just because of their hygiene is better or what, but I mean, is it more, would you say, from ignorance? What would you say is...
Probably the access to good dental care in the more rural areas could be limited.
Limited incomes.
Yeah.
Family values. It wasn't important to their... parents. It's not important to them. It's not a value.
Isn't it amazing? Some people don't get to a dentist until they're at an alarmingly old age. I mean, you've seen people who've never visited a dentist until they're, you know, in their 20s even, maybe?
Yeah,
sure.
That's so sad.
That is sad because a lot of dental disease, decay, and periodontal disease is preventable.
Mm-hmm. You say to yourself a lot, you've got to. You say to yourself, boy, if I had gotten to this person.
Gosh, yes.
If this person had come to me 5 years ago.
Every day.
I say it every day.
Every day.
And not even just from the standpoint of now you've got much more elaborate procedures that have to be done, let's say, but also from an expense standpoint. Boy, if we had addressed this thing for them 5 years ago, the expense factor would be negligible today.
Yeah. Every day we say that.
Or in their long-term prognosis. The sooner they get treatment, the better chance they have at remaining stable and being low problem for the rest of their life. The more advanced they are, the more bone loss they have. It's not always easy to keep those folks stable or to have them enjoy 10 years without a problem. It's much more difficult.
All right. So this, excuse me, this case in Rome involving... Dr. Patel. I'm saying his name because, it's public information at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it's been all over the media.
Yes. So there are numerous cases in the article, and Dr. Edelstein, you even said before, and I got the same thing when I read it, mm-hmm. that it seems like an indictment of Dr. Patel.
Yes.
You know, a personal indictment of him and his standard of care and the way that he conducts himself and his doctor of dental surgery, Dr. David Shim, et cetera, and they mentioned two dental hygienists as well. Mm-hmm. But a large part of the blame here, if we're going to place blame, comes well before this ever happened.
Yes.
It's almost like the system puts him in this position where he's got no choice.
Yes.
Or has little choice.
Yes.
All right, so you mentioned Dr. X before, and Dr. X was rather heroic. Everybody has that. Not everybody can afford to be that way. You know,
that's true. Well, there is another problem here which we haven't brought up, and that this office puts themselves out as a pediatric dental office.
Mm-hmm.
Yet Dr. Patel was a general dentist doing pediatric dentistry. And again, I don't know that what he did was necessarily wrong, because this child or children that were supposedly mistreated could have had rampant decay because they may have come from rural situations.
What is that syndrome you mentioned before?
It's bottle mouth.
Baby bottle mouth.
Well, what is that?
It's when parents let the children go to sleep with a bottle in their mouth.
Could be milk.
Milk,
could be
formula,
fruit juice.
Juice.
They just want them to sleep all night. they don't want them to wake up, so they put them to bed with that in their mouth to pacify them.
Not knowing how right. dangerous that is so to their
yeah,
dental health.
It's a slow drip of acid every minute, every 10 yes. minutes, every 20 minutes, and then the teeth are rotted pretty quickly.
Quickly. The every tooth in the mouth could yes. be completely rotted down with decay.
Now, is there anything to the possible argument that, well, those are baby teeth? They're going to come out anyway.
No, because they guide the permanent teeth.
Yeah, you have to keep them.
And they have to be around for a certain amount of time to maintain space. And there are other reasons as well, but that's
and
the main
need
reason.
Them to chew. Yes. I mean, they're just coming at the age of where they're starting to have more chewier and substantial foods in their diet. You can't let a child have mush when they need their nutrition at that age.
All right. So the dentist, though, could be in these cases could be presented with a very serious situation.
Yeah. So there's I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. He could have been presented with a child that had rampant decay, and perhaps what he did wasn't anywhere near as wrong as how it was done. Because if these folks had gone to a pediatric dentist, and they probably couldn't, because there may not have been any pediatric dentist accepting Medicare prices in this part of the state, then perhaps the child would have been sedated in a hospital, or would have had certain types of sedation in the office, or the case would have been handled in a different way by a specialist than it ultimately was handled by a general dentist.
Can't this be very traumatic to the child, too, what they went through?
Oh, yeah. Horrible. I mean, it's already... I worked with a pediatric dentist for a year, one day a week, many, many years ago, in a managed care setting. And children already require extra time and patience, even under the best of circumstances. So now you get them in the waiting room, they're already crying before you even meet them or they come back. They're afraid before they even meet us. That's a big hurdle to overcome.
You can't even give them a lollipop anymore, too.
Yeah. You know, and on top of having to do all of this catastrophic care, they're a challenge. It's very difficult.
Well, also think about this. A lot of these parents of these children may have missing teeth, or
yes.
may have their own baggage that they may consciously or subconsciously put upon the child.
Here's a tip for our losers.
When the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
For our listeners, I said losers.
Our losers?
Not our losers. Our listeners, excuse me. Here's a tip. Always without fail, when I got a child who came back and cried, I would ask, now, why are you crying? Tell me why you're crying. Mommy said, if I don't stop eating candy, I'm going to have to take you to the dentist and they're going to have to pull your teeth out. So parents will use that as some sort of parenting device. You've got to stop eating candy. If you don't, I'm taking you to the dentist.
The worst place in the world.
Already we're monsters. You can't say that to your children. You can't use that as a way to parent them.
All right, let me ask you this, and I know we're veering off of the subject here, but Dr. Patel's degree, okay, is Doctor of Dental Surgery.
Yes.
Well, now I happen to know what that is, you know, like, so that's, you know, DDS.
Yes.
And Dr.
I have the same degree.
Right.
Yes.
Dr. Shim is Doctor of Dental Medicine, which is DMD. Okay. They're identical, really.
Yeah, they're compatible.
All right. But to the layman, you know, Doctor of Dental Surgery, that's very impressive. He's a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure the public understands the difference. That there's no difference between these two.
They probably developed that terminology over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And that included all aspects of dentistry and surgery around the teeth. And technically, when you do a cavity, that's surgery for a tooth. So those are the two degrees that a dentist does hold.
All right, now, aren't most dentists today DMD?
A few programs switched over to that. I think it's just a compatible. It's a synonymous degree.
Okay, now we've talked about how managed care puts these dentists in this position
and corporate.
Look, I can't say that I wouldn't be the same way if I came out of dental school. First of all, you've had a lot of schooling. Okay, so you have a skill that very few people have, and you should be well paid for it. Frankly.
Yeah, I have no argument with that.
And you owe $200,000-$400,000.
Right.
I think I'd be very tempted to try to make my money back.
Yes. You know,
and feel justified in doing so. Okay? So, you know, in this particular case, Dr. Edelstein, one of the things that you said that perhaps they did wrong was that these children should have been taken to a dentist who specializes in children.
A pediatric dentist.
A pediatric dentist.
Clearly.
Not a general dentist.
Definitely.
So how can a general dentist have a practice called Children's Dentistry of Rome?
They don't. The corporate entity does.
Ah.
The corporate entity owns this practice, and they hire general dentists to man the practice. So the consumer, and in this case the parents, really had no idea that the dentists in this situation weren't even specialists.
So, you know, we say a lot of times, well, the parents are ignorant, and there's a lot of ignorance, and, you know, all this kind of stuff, but they are entitled to a certain protection when they deal with a dentist. You know, they should be, don't you think they should be in a position, the family, when they go to a pediatric dentist office, that this dentist is in fact a pediatric dentist?
I think it's misleading. But the fact of the matter is there's only one dental license. And the license enables a dentist to do all phases of dentistry. Now, in reality,
a guy coming out of dental school or a woman coming out of dental school could do endodontics.
Yes.
Could do periodontics.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Without any advanced training.
Yes.
Yep.
Without any advanced training.
And or experience.
Can take out wisdom teeth and can do full orthodontic cases. Yes. But there's only one dental degree. Now, that said, it's up to the consumer to be a little more discriminating. And if they have a case that's anything, you know, molar root canals, I think most molar root canals should really be done by specialists because there's a significant failure rate.
When you're presented with that, do you do that?
Yes.
You send them to
a root canal specialist if at all possible. I do, yes. Other than a minor tooth movement case, which might be suitable for Invisalign, they should see an orthodontist. Simple wisdom teeth. A general dentist can do that. I extract a ton of wisdom teeth, but if there are bony impacted wisdom teeth and it's a high level of difficulty, I send it to an oral surgeon all day long. It's not within my skill set. I don't have any problem with that. Same thing with periodontal treatment. I can't tell you how many patients will have periodontal treatment in a general office. It's not really even being fixed. It may be slowed down a little bit. It may be, they may put the fire out a little bit, but they're still burning embers. But because they're not being referred to a periodontist, it's not being fixed.
Do you have to sometimes, what's the term that we use? You know, you have to sometimes come in behind somebody else's work and clean it up.
In that situation, yes. With untreated or undertreated periodontal disease, all the time.
Mm.
All the time. Anyone, and we talked about this once before, anyone can put implants in. Now, it turns out that if you go to a periodontist or an oral surgeon, you most likely will have a higher success rate, less complication rate.
If they have the requisite training, because didn't you say that anybody can hold himself out as...
I said a periodontist or an oral surgeon with advanced training.
With advanced training.
Yes. Or, you know, there are general dentists that do a fine job with implants, but they take dozens and dozens and dozens of courses. The problem is there are people out there that may take a weekend course in implants, and now guess what? They do implants. And the problem is that's where a higher failure rate and a higher complication rate may arise.
You sometimes see their work, their patients end up in your chair?
We saw a case last week where it was a nightmare.
Mm. All right, we've got to take yet another break. But I do want to talk more about the case in Rome and also, if you don't mind, the case in Syracuse, New York, and also the case in Indiana, because, well, it's staggering, actually. Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, office located at 2045 Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital in Buckhead. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com, and we will be right back with more of Open Wide with Sue and Dr. Edelstein in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. One thing I do want to mention before we talk about these cases that we said we would mention is your credentials Dr. Edelstein. Mm-hmm. So you went to undergraduate at Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very impressive. I happen to know that's Ivy League. Okay. As a guy, I went to a non-Ivy League school in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. right across town from an Ivy League school. I know, believe me, you know, I've got all kinds of respect for you having gone to Cornell. You went to dental school at Emory.
I did.
And you were an outstanding student there, and you went on to your postgraduate training at the University of Pennsylvania, which is, I mean, Penn, man, I got to tell you, you know, being from Philly, Penn is very, very well thought of. Very well thought of.
Thank you. Penn was fun. You know, I talk about Cornell. I went back for the first time in 38 years.
I know you told me that. You said you felt like an old man there.
Oh, my God, did I feel like an old man. I mean, boy, did they look young on the campus.
Oh, I know. When I went back to my, well, Temple University, my alma mater, and kids there calling me sir, you know, and gosh, I feel like an old man.
They're probably helping me across the street, you know, in Ithaca.
All right, so let's talk about the cases in Syracuse, New York, and in Indiana. And interestingly, they both involve the same group. It's
yes,
a group called Aspen.
The same group. It is a corporate office. And in the case of New York, the group was fined $450,000 for upselling patients, procedures that they may not have needed. And then in Indiana, it was misleading advertising. They were advertising some sort of discounts here or there, and then the folks walked in, and it was like a bait and switch, and they were fined $70,000+.
Yeah, it looks like they were fined actually $95,000.
Okay, there you go.
Which sounds rather low, quite frankly, when you read the article as to what went on there. It says of that payment, $15,000 will be used to repay affected consumers. I don't know
it's
that they'll ever be.
Not a lot to repay the affected consumers.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll ever be made whole.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. But again, this is part of the same situation where you have corporate entities running a dental practice. And both of these situations talked about that this is a corporate entity. This is not these decisions to do these to do the selling or do the advertising. This is not the dentist doing it, most likely. It's some sort of corporate environment. I don't know who owns Aspen, but a lot of times there are hedge funds that own these outfits.
It's not owned by a dentist?
They don't.
Isn't that interesting?
They don't necessarily have to be owned by. See, the way they get around it in the Aspen situation, I know, the way they get around it is they say that they provide management assistance, not treatment decisions.
So you don't have to be a dentist for that.
Right. But in reality, they put pressure on the dentist to do. For instance, we just talked about Dr. X having to use a very low-level lab. So they do put pressure on the dentist to make decisions and to treat patients in a certain way or a certain volume or a certain manner. And sometimes it's indirect and sometimes it's direct. And they get around the dental board laws that way.
And we have several such, not necessarily Aspen, but we have several such conglomerates, I'll call them, here in Atlanta.
A lot of them.
We do. We have quite a few. And they are growing in number, actually. And I think the consumer should decide for themselves. Do they want to be part of a large corporate entity where there are many layers and probably higher turnover of their providers and may have incentives that aren't in the right place? Or do they want to be treated by an individual dentist that's been around for 30 years or my colleagues that have been around for a while? They own their own office. And they answer to themselves, and they have an opportunity to put themselves in a position to do the best dentistry possible.
What's the name of the gentleman that was on the show a few weeks ago? He's your implant.
Mike King.
Okay.
From Zimmer Biomet Dental Implants.
Okay. So Mike King was on the show, and Mike King calls on dozens and dozens of dentists. Right, many dental practices. Mm-hmm. I think he handled like Atlanta all the way to the Alabama border.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this whole part of the state.
Okay. He calls on many dozens of dentists. He probably in the hundreds,
yes.
Actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I asked him point blank, what do you think of Dr. Edelstein? Okay, and I don't want to embarrass you, Dr. Edelstein, but I did ask him, what do you think of Dr. Edelstein? He said, well, the best way to answer that question is that he's my dentist.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that the best way to answer the question?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the thing that frustrates me, and I'm sure it frustrates you as well, probably a lot more than me, is that people still have this idea that, you know, a dentist is a dentist is a dentist. Hey, guess what? Our town just got a dentist. We finally have a dentist. And if there's anything I've learned from being a co-host of the show, it's that the dentist that you use has a great deal to do with your dental health and your well-being and your future. The particular dentist that you use means almost everything. I can't say it means everything, but it sure means a heck of a lot.
I think you're right on.
Sue Skipper?
I do, especially with today's knowledge that gum health is ground zero to your overall general health, your phrase, Jeff, that you coined.
What can I say?
It does make a difference because that dentist may be helping you save your life.
And on that cheerful note, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. I want to remind you folks, the new patient special, $129, $650 worth of services. I took advantage of it, and it was wonderful. So I want you to visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. They're located at 2045 Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital. And Dr. Edelstein and Sue Skipper, of course, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
This has been Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, Tuesdays at noon on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.